we forget. In the late 1930s, there came into being a revolutionary group in the treatment of alcoholism to be called Alcoholics Anonymous. This group of chronic, unmanageable, compulsive users of alcohol had tested and failed every known human agency and method to attain a life of sobriety. It would seem that the suffering alcoholic was doomed to insanity and or death. However, through the sponsorship and guidance of the Oxford Group, our early AA fathers were presented with a set of fundamental spiritual concepts augmented with God's grace, would remove the compulsion and the obsessive need to drink and set in place good orderly directions for living with sobriety. The miracle of God's gift of sobriety was now exemplified by former sufferers, and the message of recovery was for anyone that desired a change to build a new life by pursuing a new dimension of noble ideals and spiritual forces that would lead us to a union with God and a place in His plans. As one who was privileged to have known the founders and early members of both the Oxford and AA groups, I will be eternally grateful for their humility, dependence on God, and the love and unselfishness by sharing their experience, strength, and hope that we who are to follow can live in the fellowship of the Spirit and know God's truth. I shall always believe that I was exposed to and led to AA through divine guidance. It was the right time, the right place, the right group, the right sponsor, and by the grace of God, the miracle of sobriety and a new life was now mine. Love freely offered had been freely taken. Since I am now a member of an exclusive group of 40 plus years of sobriety, whose ranks are rapidly thinning, I find a solid comfort in exchanging views and experiences with those few still active about the moments of truth, incidents, information, and wisdom that have been the basic elements in my recovery. In retrospect, it seems that a life of sobriety, joy, and freedom is a product of structuring and simplifying the spiritual principles. The more we structure the spiritual principles, the freer we become. Keep it simple. At this point in time, I can, with some objectivity, examine the past and bring forth the basic elements of truth and wisdom and learning to structure the spiritual guides and principles. I will not attempt to comment on the 12 steps of how it works, the 12 traditions of why it works, the 12 promises of goals and guarantees, the 12 concepts dealing with the welfare and the protection of the fellowship, because I consider them to be inviolate. Each facet must be approached by each one of us in our own way and in God's time. In the foregoing, I spoke about the 12 steps and the 4 absolutes as the spiritual principles of our program. The 12 steps represent our philosophy. The 4 absolutes represent our self-help objectives to establish our relationship with God. The 4 absolutes on how to listen in prayer and meditation were borrowed from the Oxford Group back in the days when we were seeking help and guidance to formulate a useful, happy, and a significantly sober life. If you will revisit the 12 steps with care, you will find the 4 absolutes to be the theme which is discernible in a sober life of quality. How to listen in prayer and meditation, as specifically called for in our 10th and our 11th step, suggests a method and a medium to communicate with God that we will know His truth and power to practice that which is good. The 4 absolutes. The 4 absolutes consist of absolute honesty, absolute love, absolute purity. And because the absolutes are not specifically repeated in our scripture traditions, some of us are inclined to forget or ignore them. This premise is approximately as sound as it would be to suggest that the Holy Bible should be scuttled. Yet in many old-time groups where the solid spirit of our fellowship is so strongly exemplified, the absolutes receive frequent mention. Indeed, you often find a set of old placards carefully preserved which are trotted out for prominent display each meeting night. There could be a unanimity on the proposition that living our way of life must include not only an awareness but a constant striving towards greater achievement in the qualities which the absolutes represent. Now about the honesty absolute. Over and over we must ask ourselves, is it true or is it false? For honesty is the eternal search for truth. It is by far the most difficult of the four absolutes for anyone, but especially for us in this fellowship. The problem drinker develops genuine artistry and deceit. Too many, and we plead guilty, simply turn over a new leaf and relax. That is wrong. The real virtue in honesty lies in the persistent, dedicated striving for it. There is no relaxed twilight zone. It's either full speed ahead, constantly, or it's not honesty we seek. And the unrelenting pursuit of truth will set you free, even if you don't quite catch up to it. We need not choose to pursue falsity. All we need is to relax our pursuit of truth, and falsity will find us. The search for truth is the noblest expression of the soul. Let a human throw the engines of his soul into the doing or making of something good, and the instinct of workmanship alone will take care of his honesty. The noblest pleasure we can have is to find a great new truth and discard an old prejudice. When act is not actively sought, truth seldom comes to light, but false death does. Truth is life, and falsity is spiritual death. It is an everlasting, unrelenting instinct for truth that counts. Honesty is not a policy. It has to be a conscious, constant state of mind. Accuracy is close to being a twin brother of honesty. But inaccuracy and exaggeration are at least kissing cousins of dishonesty. We may bring ourselves to believe almost anything by rationalization, another of our fine arts. And so it's well to begin and end our inquiry with the questions, is it true? Any man who loves to search for truth is precious to any fellowship or society. Any intended violation of honesty stabs the health of not only the doer, but the whole fellowship. On the other hand, if we are honest to the limit of our ability, the basic appetite for truth in others, which may be dormant but not dead, will rise majestically to join us. Like sobriety, it's the power of example that does a job. It is much simpler to appear honest than to be honest. We must strive to be in reality what we appear to be. It is easier to be honest with others than with ourselves. Our searching self-inventories help because the man who knows himself is at least on the doorstep of honesty. Our instinct for exhibitionism, even though held in check, is a form of honesty. When we try to enhance our stature in the eyes of others, dishonesty is there in the shadows. When falsehood even creeps in, we are getting back on the merry-go-round because falsehoods not only disagree with truth, they quarrel with each other. Remember? It is one thing to devoutly wish that the truth may be on your side, and it is quite another to wish sincerely to be on the side of truth. Honesty would seem to be the toughest of our four absolutes, and at the same time, the most exciting challenge. Our sobriety is a gift, but honesty is a grace that we must earn and constantly fight to protect and enlarge. Is it true or false? Let us make that a ceaseless question that we try to answer with all the sober strength and intelligence we have. Salute on selfishness. At first blush, unselfishness would seem to be the simplest of all to understand, define, and accomplish. But we have a long road to travel because ours was a real mastery of the exact opposite during their drinking days. A little careful thought will show that unselfishness in its finest sense, the kind for which we must strive for in our way of life, is not easy to reach or describe in detail. In the final analysis, it must gain for us the selflessness which is our spiritual cornerstone, the real significance of our anonymity. Proceeding with the question method of digesting the absolute, we suggest you ask yourself over and over again in judging what you are about to do, say, think, or decide, how will this affect the other fellow? Our unselfishness must include not merely that which we do for others, but that which we do for ourselves. I once heard an old-timer say that this was a 100% selfish program in one respect, namely that we had to maintain our own sobriety and its quality before we could possibly help others in a maximum degree. Yet we know we must give of ourselves to others in order to maintain our own sobriety, in the spirit of complete selflessness, with no thought of reward. How do we put these two things together? Well, for one thing, it points out that we shall gain in direct proportion to the real help we give others. How many of us make hospital calls simply because we think we need to do it to stay sober? Those who think only of their own need and who reflect little on the question of doing the fellows at the hospital some genuinely good are missing the boat. We know, for we used to make hospital calls in much the same way that we took vitamin pills. Then one day in our early sobriety, we were asked to call on a patient. Never will we forget the anxiety on the way to that nursing home. And after nearly 2 hours of earnest talk, we left, worried about whether we had helped or hurt, or perhaps had accomplished nothing at all. Some of his questions stayed with us. We thought of better answers later on and returned to see him several times. We are helped on our long journey to unselfishness by our great mission of understanding, which sometimes seems as precious as the gift of sobriety itself. But the quality cannot be confined alone to that which we do for others. We must be unselfish even in our pursuits of self-preservation. Not the least of our aid to others comes from the example of our own lives. Is there any protection against that first drink which equals our thought of what it might do to others? Those with unselfish love guided us in the beginning, and those whom we in turn later guided, we are often reminded of the last verse of an anonymous poem. I must remember as I go through sober days, both high and low, what I must always seem to be for him who always follows me. Absolute love. We often learn more by questions than answers. Did you ever hear a question that caused you to think for days or even weeks? The questions which have no easy answer are often the key to the truth. However, in this series on the Four Absolutes, we are concerned with the questions we should be asking ourselves over and over again in life. The integrity of our answer to these questions will determine the quality of our life, may even determine the continuance of our sobriety. A good question to ask ourselves on love might be, is it ugly or is it beautiful? We are experts on ugliness. We have really been there. We are not experts on beauty, but we have tasted a little and we are hungry for more. Love is beauty. Coming from the depths of fear, physical agony, mental torture, and spiritual starvation, we feel completely unloved, impregnated with self-pity, poisoned by resentment, and devoured by a powerful ego with which alcohol has brought complete blindness. We receive understanding and love from strangers, and we make progress as we in turn give it to new strangers. It's as simple as that. Fortunately for us, love is inspiring from the very beginning, even in kindergarten, which is where many of us still are. The old song tells us that love is a many-splendored thing. In giving it, we receive it. But the real thrill of giving. Consider that this great mission of love, which is ours, is seldom experienced by the non-alcoholic, and you have a new reason for gratitude. Few are privileged to save lives. Fewer have the rich experience of being God's helper and the gift of the second life. Love is a poor man's beginning towards God. We reach our tall step when we give love to the new man who is poor today as we were poor yesterday. A man too proud to know he is poor has turned away from God, with or without alcohol. We have been there too, but if he has a drinking problem, we can show him the way through love, understanding, and our own experience. When we live for our own sobriety, we again become beggars in spiritual rags, blind once again with the dust of pride and self. Soon we shall be starving with the hunger of devouring ourselves, perhaps even lose sobriety. Love is giving of yourself, and unless we do, our progress will be lost. Each one owes the gift of this second life of sobriety to every other human being he meets in the sinless presence of God, and especially to other alcoholics who still suffer. Not to give of himself brings the desolation of a new poverty to the sober alcoholic. When we offer love, we offer our life. Are we prepared to give it? When another offers us love, he offers his life. Have we the grace to receive it? When love is offered, God is there. Have we received him? The will to love is God's will. Have we taken the third step? Ask yourself, is it ugly or is it beautiful? And if it's truly beautiful, then it is the way of love. It is the way of AA. It is the will of God as we understand him. Absolute purity. Purity is simple to understand. Purity is flawless quality. Gerard Groot, in his famous 14th century book on meditation, had an essay entitled, A Pure Mind and Simple Intention, in which he says, by two wings a man is lifted up from things earthly, namely by simplicity and purity. Simplicity does tend towards God, purity does apprehend and taste him. Purity is a quality of both the mind and heart, and perhaps we should say the soul of man. As far as the mind is concerned, it is a simple case of answering the question, is it right or is it wrong? That should be easy for us. There is no twilight zone between right and wrong. Even in our drinking days, we knew the difference. With most of us, knowing the difference was the cause or part of the cause of our drinking. We did not want to face the reality of doing wrong. It isn't in the realm of the mental aspects of purity that our main problem lies. We can answer all the questions quoted above to the best of our ability and give the correct answer. It's in the realm of the heart and the spirit we face difficulty. We know which is right, but do we have the dedicated will to do it? Just as a real desire to stop drinking may exist to make our way of life effective for us, so we must have a determined desire to do that which we know is right. And if we are to achieve any measurable degree of purity, it has been well said that intelligence is discipline. In other words, knowledge means little until it goes into action. We knew we should not take that first drink, remember? Until we translate our knowledge into the action of our own lives, the value of it is non-existent. We are not intelligent under such circumstances. So it is with the decency of our lives, we know what is right, but unless we do it, the knowledge is a haunting vacuum. In discussing unselfishness, we mentioned that it included more than just doing for others. We repeat that it includes all that we do, since much of our help to others comes through our own example. Nowhere is this more true than in the decency and the rightness of our lives. Were we to contemplate the peace and contentment that a pure conscience would bring to us, and the joy and help that it would bring to others, we would be more determined about our spiritual progress. If our surrender under the third step has not been absolute, perhaps we should give the 11th step more attention. If you have turned your will and your life over to God as you understand him, purity will come to you in due course, because God is good. In purity, as in honesty, the virtue lies in our striving. and like seeking truth. Giving our all in this constant pursuit will make us free, even though we may never quite catch up to it. Such pursuit is a thrilling and challenging journey. The journey is just as important as the destination, however slow it may seem. As it is said, in living as in knowing, be intent upon the purest way. As it is said, in living as in knowing, be intent upon the purest way. Summarizing the four absolutes, our consideration of the absolutes individually leads us to a few conclusions. The 12 steps represent our philosophy. The absolutes represent our objective and self-help and the means to attain them. Honesty, being a ceaseless search for truth, is our most difficult and yet most challenging objective. It is a long road for anyone, but a longer road for us to find the truth. Purity is easy to determine. We know what is right and wrong. Our problem here is the unrelenting desire to do that which is right. Unselfishness is the stream in which our sober life must flow, the boulevard down which we march triumphantly by the grace of God, ever alert against being sidetracked into a dark, obscure alley along the way. Our unselfishness must penetrate our whole life, not just our deeds for others, for the greatest gift we bestow on others is the example of our own life as a whole. Love is the medium, the blood of the good life, which circulates and keeps alive its worth and beauty. It is not only our circulatory system within ourselves, but it is our medium of communication to others. The real virtue is in our striving for these absolutes. It is a never-ending journey, and our joy and happiness must come each step of the way, not at the end, because the end is endless. Cicero said, if you pursue labor, the labor passes and the good remains. But if you court evil through pleasure, the pleasure passes and the evil remains. Our life is a diary in which we mean to write one story and usually write quite another. It is when we compare the two that we have our humblest hour. But let's compare through our self-industry and make today a new day. Men who know themselves have at least ceased to be fools. Remember, if you follow the golden rule, it's always your move too. To love what is true and right and not to do it is in reality not to love. And we are trying to face reality, remember? The art of living in truth and right is the finest of fine arts, and like any fine art, must be learned slowly and practiced with incessant care. We must approach this objective of the absolute humbly. We pray for these things and sometimes forget that these virtues must be earned. The gates of wisdom and truth are closed to those wise in their conceit, but ever open to the humble and to the teachable. To discover what is true and to practice what is good are the two highest aims in life. If we would love, if we would be humble, we would not stoop, but rather we should stand to our fullest height, close to our highest power that shows us what the smallness of our greatness is. Remember our four questions. Is it true or false? Is it right or wrong? How will this affect the other fellow? And is it ugly or beautiful? Answering these queries every day with absolute integrity and following the dictates of those answers one day at a time will surely lead us well on our journey towards observing and applying the absolutes. Now about prayer and meditation. The nine steps on how to listen is not offered as the only way, as the state of the art is different for each of us. However, how to listen is offered as a basis for prayer and meditation that will make and discover that the way of love is the way of AA and the will of God as we understand Him. But everybody longs for a union with God, and those of us who have tried to improve our conscious contact with God by using human wisdom and knowledge have failed. But God has a plan. God can show you what to do. Some people do not believe in God. It can work for them too, because for all of us, it is an experiment. Many people pray, but they do all the talking. God gave man two ears and one mouth, so why don't we listen twice as much as we talk? Step one, take time. Take time in the early morning. If you want to establish a union with God, you have to take time to find the right plan. The early morning seems to be the best time to tune up our lives. Open your heart to God, write down the thoughts that come to you. Step two, take paper and pencil. God is always speaking. How can you listen? Here is the answer. You write it down so that you can listen better and you can remember His words. It is practical. You decide to live by and strive for a set of absolute moral standards. You are quiet. You write down the thoughts that come. Step three. Is every thought you get a thought from God? Certainly not. Most of us have been in touch with the wrong sources of information for a long time. They influence us. So we need to test our thoughts. A. Are they in line with absolute honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love? B. Are they in love with our real duties, domestic, business, social, community, country, and mankind? C. There is a test of other minds. More light comes in through two windows than one. When in doubt, look for direction with others who have wholeheartedly opened their minds to God. Step four. Talk over what you have written. Talk with your spouse, sponsor, members of the group, and if need be, a spiritual advisor. There are three sides to every question. Your side, my side, and the right side. Guidance shows which is the right side, not who is right, but what is right. Step five. What if two or more people get different ideas? Be honest about your motives. Have further quiet. Thoughts may come showing where disunity has come in, our lack of honesty, our lack of trust. Put these right. The united plan is not hard to find. It will come. Step six. Carry out the thoughts that have come. You will only be sure of guidance as you carry it out. You cannot prove that a rudder will guide a ship until the ship is moving. But anyone determined to change and build a new life can find in the silence the way to go forward. It is in the silence that we are reborn. Step seven. What if no guidance comes? Generally, there is an answer. Here are some of the blocks to guidance. A. Any wrong relationship in my life? B. Any wrong that I have not faced and put right? C. Any compromise or indulgence I will not give up? D. Anything I know I should do and have not done? Put these things right and try again. Step eight, what are the results? A growing number in our fellowship are committing themselves to take time in the morning, in quiet, to find the way. They are being renewed. Lives are being united. A new dimension of noble ideals and spiritual forces are now in place, and you have a place in God's plan. When man listens and obeys, God speaks and acts. Step nine, a new life and world can be ours. If we will listen and carry out His plan, we can have a new and exciting life. To continue to improve our conscious contact with God, we must strive to take our personal inventory and maintain a clear and clean conscience as called for in our 10th step. Through prayer and meditation, God's will be revealed. And if we are painstaking about the 11th step, we will have knowledge of His plan and the power to practice the principles of love, honesty, unselfishness, and purity in all of our affairs as set forth in the 12 steps and join in the fellowship of the Spirit. Unfortunately, in these later years, we have been assaulted and subjected to alien philosophies and quasi-scientific theories that are not improving and have not improved the prospects. I strongly suggest that without a strong, enthusiastic, vigorous effort to recapture our lost position and interest in the 12-step work, also personal and group sponsorship, we will become the treatment centers, encounter groups, and dumpsters. The new person's chances are no better than the quality of the individual and group leadership. And the obvious answer is to return to the tried and true principles of love and service as it was practiced in the beginning. Dr. Bob made the statement in his last address in Cleveland when he spoke to us about keeping the program simple. Bob's farewell address was very emotional, and most of us knew that he was terminal and soon to die. As he stood and looked about him, he mentioned how grateful it was that he had had an opportunity to look and see us and deliver a message. He began his message by saying, "My good friends in AA, there are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is. We understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get such a degree of smug complacency that we are not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help which has been so beneficial to us." And he thanked us and sat down. Like most of us there, I was transfixed. I knew that I had heard and been at the moment of truth. The message of love and service, I now understood. This beautiful man will live in the hearts of all of us for all times. His vision and wisdom guided us through the troubled times when we were seeking information to formulate and define our relationships and the course of action to govern our members and the groups in the pursuit of those novel ideals of love and service. His acts of love, unselfishness, purity, and honesty in all of his affairs is still with us. And for this, we thank God. And now let me close with the Serenity Prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr. The Serenity Prayer in its entirety is the epitome and the essence of our spiritual philosophy and concepts. It places us in the now and assures us that if we strive to think and act in harmony with God's will, that we can trust Him to make all things right. Surely God is good. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as He did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting He will make all things right if I surrender to His will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with Him forever in the next. Amen. The materials that have been recorded on this tape have been presented at random. and represents only personal expressions and information that have reinforced and aided me in improving my relationship with God and my fellow man. I sincerely hope that some part of this material will be of value to you and yours, as it has been for me. Sincerely, Paul E. Keebler.
The Four Absolutes as Spiritual Tools. Our recent celebrations of 50 years gave cause for thanksgiving that millions of alcoholics throughout the world have, by the grace of God, received the precious gift of sobriety in a second life. As one of the pioneers of our fellowship, my thoughts often return to those days of isolation, poisoned with fear, physical agony, resentment, and hate. In reviewing the miracle of my recovery and AA as a whole, the full realization of God's power as a force for spiritual and material stability is overwhelming and beyond my comprehension. Upon reflection, there are times when in awe and wonder, I fear that my new life could be an illusion. However, when I examine the past, the hand of a loving God has always been there to guide me with a true sense of spiritual and material proportion, a real sense of value, and an undeniable evidence of a return to sanity. And so, in gratitude and appreciation, I am a willing witness to testify and share my spiritual rebirth and the aims, as I understand them, of the AA philosophy of the 12 steps for recovery and the Four Absolutes as the basic spiritual concept of beauty of thought, word, and deed as the principles of the program. It has been said, you cannot prove that a rudder will steer a ship until the ship is moving. And so it is that my rudder, guided with God's wisdom and love, together with the caring and sharing and sponsorship of the group, set a course for my recovery through a series of 12 steps of spiritual experience. For many years, I have shared the story of my release from alcoholism and how my sponsors and the group, with patience and tolerance, loved me into sobriety and a new dimension in living. The prospects for my recovery were very bleak, especially so since I had little or no religious or philosophical orientation. My lifestyle, values, and lack of self-discipline had put me in a descending spiral to ultimate destruction. And how, in my darkest hour, through the grace of God, the hand of AA was there, and the gift of sobriety and the second life was now mine. In retrospect, my recovery was accomplished in three phases. The first phase embraced the first and second steps as a group and dealt with the disease of alcoholism. The second phase embraced the steps 3 through 9 as a group and dealt with my spiritual awakening. The third phase embraced steps 10, 11, and 12 as a group and dealt with the plan for living daily and improving my relationship with God. In sharing my story of recovery, I have always emphasized the Four Absolutes as the basis for thoughts, words, and deeds, as they relate to each group and step in the various phases of the recovery process. To this end, the complete story of my recovery, number 1, the Cornhuskers Roundup, Omaha, Nebraska. This is a story of my personal recovery. Number 2, lest we forget, the Four Absolutes and related subjects, a complete and in-depth information. Number 3, the plan for daily living is a guide for love and service. Number 4, the spiritual significance of the people, places, and events in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Number 5, the Four Absolutes as spiritual tools. spiritual common sense. The four absolutes of honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity were borrowed by our pioneers from the Oxford Group and incorporated into a step program as spiritual guides in the pursuit of a useful, happy, and significant sober life. And while they are no longer repeated as such in our steps and traditions, they form a spiritual structure that is discernible throughout the 12 steps for a sober life of quality. Our consideration of the absolutes lead us to a few conclusions. The absolutes are keyed to, interwoven with, and linked to the steps, not only as our spiritual objective, but the means to attain them and represent our spiritual principles. The identification, definitions, understanding of the following four absolutes is of necessity simplistic and primitive for the purposes of this dissertation. Those who wish to have additional and more comprehensive information should obtain the cassette tapes covering the four absolutes and related subjects. The four absolutes for honesty, is it true or false? For unselfishness, how will it affect the other fellow? For love, is it ugly or beautiful? For purity, is it right or is it wrong? The absolutes are not only our medium to communicate with God and our fellow man, they also can become a set of moral standards and spiritual laws to direct our thoughts, words, and deeds, that we may act in harmony with God's will. We are no longer consumed with doubts, fears, and indecisions. The search for wisdom and truth will be revealed by asking ourselves four questions. Is it true or false? Is it right or wrong? How will it affect the other fellow? Is it ugly or beautiful? Answering these queries with absolute integrity will result in the proper use of our God-given free will. If love is the rock from which our fountain of unselfishness, honesty, and purity springs, then it is beauty in its purest sense. And while the absolutes are mentioned separately, they are linked together and reinforce each other. Love is the reality and truth that belongs to God. And when we use it, we are using God's power and will. Phase one of my recovery consisted of a 12-step call on a suffering and hopeless drunkard with a message that my problem was a treatable disease called alcoholism, and that if I would express an honest and sincere desire to stop drinking, I could become a member of a group that would provide me with information, sponsors, and a demonstrated program that would enable me to stop drinking, release me from the compulsion to drink, and acquire good, orderly direction for the management of my life and affairs. A review of phase one of my recovery provides a classical example of the thoughts, words, and deeds in concert with the absolutes in steps one and two in carrying the message to a suffering alcoholic. The message that alcoholism was a treatable disease gave rise to a cautious hope. The 12-step effort on my behalf was motivated by an unselfish love that was freely offered, establishing a mutual trust based on honesty. The mantle of anonymity with no thoughts of reward or personal gain gave validity to unselfishness. The quality of purity was presented as the intelligent discipline of simple intentions, positive motives, to choose and do the things that are right, just for virtue's sake. The 12-step call proved to be the moment of truth and the most beautiful experience of my life. In following the dictates of the steps and absolutes, my callers offered their unconditional and unqualified love reinforced with honesty, unselfishness, and purity. Instinctively, I knew they spoke the truth, and the sharing of their spiritual experiences created a hunger for the ideals and freedom they expressed. They had indeed opened my heart and mind. I was being led to a level of higher understanding. In sharing the AA Fellowship's working beliefs of a God-directed life, their honesty was not tempered with boasting, self-righteousness, brutal frankness, bold, unvarnished facts about themselves and others, reluctance to discuss faults, half-truths, vapid words of consolation, uncompromising sectarianism, and lack of sincerity. Their purity was not tempered with hypocrisy. Keep moving at all costs. Advertise your alcoholism and drugging, publicly masquerading as candor. Sex domination as love and mental snobbery. Their unselfishness was not tempered with life as unfair, envy and hate, self-pity, spiritual pride, false pride and jealousy, lack of understanding that we can help others, hate and distrust. Their love was not tempered with looking for self-motives in others' actions that kill the good within ourselves, putting too much importance on being thanked. Avoid participating in social and economic responsibility. Preaching that all is vanity, etc., etc. The list could go on ad infinitum. As alcoholics, we are familiar with all of these ugly and destructive symptoms of a cunning and baffling compulsion that distorts and robs us of our sanity. We are experts in ugliness, chaos, and disorder, and I was now ready to abandon myself to a God of love and join with a group in striving to absorb and apply the absolute as a means to earn God's grace, that I might live in a sober and an exemplary life as a way of AA and the will of God. My 12-step contacts provided some casual physical and medical help to avoid withdrawal dangers and damage. They strongly advise that I consider a disciplined program of HALT, H-A-L-T, avoid hunger, anger, loneliness, and tiring. My contacts were now acting as temporary sponsors and providing me with a big book, introduced me to the group, and maintained a constant personal contact. I was invited to the various members' homes, workplaces, social events, and received an intimate and inside view of ex-drunkards like me living joyfully and successfully in complete freedom from the nightmare and the insanity of alcoholism. I was coming to believe that AA was an instrument of a life force or spiritual energy that was working in their lives. They were not only sober, they were also happy and filled with spirit of fellowship and goodwill. Under their constant care and love, I managed to stay sober. The meetings were a source of comfort and inspiration. However, my 4 months of sobriety had been achieved one moment at a time. Sobriety was not enough. I was in a severe state of anxiety and low self-esteem. My personal problems were overwhelming. I sought out one of our earliest members. He was the right sponsor at the right time. He calmly assured me that I was now teachable, and he would personally sponsor me, and I could also rely on reinforcement from the group. Under Paul's constant direction, wisdom, and knowledge, I was led through a series of spiritual experiences by implementing the steps 2, 3, through 9, with the absolutes as the basis or structure for my thoughts, words, and actions. The spiritual experiences were profound. The change in personality, the release from the compulsion, the emotional stability was unbelievable, and I was now enjoying the 12 promises that had done one time were inconceivable. To the best of my ability, I had with and by the grace of God removed the obstacles and barriers isolating me from God and my fellow man. I now knew the absolutes were working beliefs and not misty ideals. They are working standards within the scope of anyone willing to place his will and life into God's keeping. I was now in the realm of the Spirit, a consciousness of God. In analyzing phase two of my recovery is again a classical example of the steps as a philosophy and the four absolutes as a spiritual tool to attain the precious gift of a spiritual awakening and the greatest great fact of a higher understanding. My sponsor insisted that the steps 3 through 9 be considered as a group, interlocked and so linked, and to be implemented in their chronological order. The overlapping of the steps would reinforce and enhance the spiritual effectiveness. To avoid frustration and misdirection, I was to consider the four absolutes as a set of moral standards to gauge my thoughts, words, and actions in concert with the steps to earn God's grace for a spiritual awakening. Old ideas and prejudices were to be set aside that I could go forward with an open mind and a receptive heart. The third step made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God was often. I could certainly plead guilty to the improper use of my will and mismanage of my life. However, the prospects of becoming a robot or non-entity frightened and confused me. My sponsor advised that the operative word was decision. And if the decision was made in accordance with the absolute, it would be honest, unselfish, and pure in motives and purposes, and could be offered to God without. Turning our will and life over to God's care did not mean we become pious or bored. We do not give up our ordinary duties and obligations. It merely means that we surrender everything that stands between God and us. God is love in the absolute, and He will reveal more of His wisdom and love for us as we put our house in order. In keeping with the spiritual concepts of the absolute, I seal my decision with the third step prayer on my knees before the group as a sharing experience of sincerity and humility. Fourth step. My experience had been positive in using the absolute for guidance in my third step, and I was eager to proceed to the fourth step. This step was to be pivotal in my recovery. I thank God for my sponsor in the absolute who dissuaded me away from easy and softer ways. They suggested a comprehensive format for a thorough moral inventory, using the absolutes as moral standards to define the nature of the wrongs and identifying the attending shortcomings and defects that contributed to each experience. The format consisted of making a list of people, places, and things that were victims of real or imaginary wrongs that I was directly or indirectly responsible for. The format consisted of listing by categories and names of 1, members of my parental family, 2, members of my domestic family, 3, social relationships and ties, 4, business associates and industry ties, 5, citizenship, institutions and country, 6, ecology, mankind, the world in general. In researching the various categories, I was surprised to find that most of my transgressions were those of omission rather than commission. Nevertheless, in each and every case of bad relationships, social and business conflicts, destructive attitudes and actions, I had violated one or all of the absolutes, whether it should have been honesty, it was deceit, falsity, lies, and other forms of dishonesty. Where there should have been unselfishness, there was self-interest at any cost, lack of equity or fairness, indifference, and other forms of selfishness. Where there should have been purity, there was a lack of sincerity and will to do the right thing, courage to face reality, manipulation, and bad motives, misrepresentation, and subterfuge. Where there should have been love, there was ugliness, self-pity, resentment, hostility, anger and hate, and other forms of destructive self-interest. The list of people, places, and things had now been carefully reviewed and evaluated, using the absolutes as a gauge for moral and ethical standards, had saved me from drowning in a sea of pettiness and nitpicking. Obviously, there was plenty of serious and flagrant conditions to be dealt with. My inventory was now completed, and to the best of my ability, has been thorough. Each transgression and situation had been listed and carefully audited, setting forth the nature, the shortcomings, the defects, by definition and identification of the people, places, and things. My four-step inventory now represented the sum total of my experiences and would provide any or all the basic information for the ensuing steps, 5 through 9. My inventory reflected my life, my personality, my total lack of spiritual values. The dark side of my nature had prevailed. I was indeed in need of a personality change. My sponsor and other members of the group assured me that in compliance with the fifth step, I would undergo a change and a sense of relief would be mine. As a result of admitting the exact nature of my wrongs, to God, myself, and another human being. Once we have shared our wrongs with God and another human being, the past is just forgotten. I had carefully chosen a boyhood chum for his character, integrity, and confidentiality for my fifth-step catharsis. I explained to him the spiritual aspects of the fifth step, and by using the absolutes as my spiritual guides, I was able to avoid embarrassment, self-depreciation, apologetic references, excuses, justification, and so forth. My admission of the nature of my wrongs were carefully translated from my four-step inventory in all honesty and truth as I knew it. My motives were pure in wanting to turn away from my addiction and embrace a new way of life and happiness. I thanked him for his unselfishness and love and for his presence as a surrogate for humanity. During this long and sensitive sitting, I began to feel a spiritual energy, and at the completion of the session, I knew that we had been blessed with the spiritual grace of God. It seems when two or more meet in His name, God is there too. I had surrendered my past to God and admitted my faults to my fellow man, and a solid sense of well-being and confidence was building in me. My sponsor suggested that surrendering my past to God was to be immediately followed by praying to God that my shortcomings and defects be removed. My four-step inventory brought me to the full realization that the shortcomings and defects were the barriers isolating me from God. Further action and information would be required to make amends and restitution, as called for in our steps 8 and 9. Divine forgiveness and spiritual regeneration was now a possibility. My faith and expectations were growing, and I was anxious to engage the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th steps. A casual consideration of the 6th and 7th steps, that I was humbly and willing and ready to have God remove my shortcomings and defects, could be effected without difficulty. However, in a review of my four-step inventory, a litany of shortcomings and defects had been logged, directly related to my moral transgressions and wrongs. The full impact of these serious spiritual cancers were no longer subject to rationalization, since a fearless written inventory had set out, recorded, described, and defined these shortcomings and defects. They were, in fact, lethal poisons and not to be dealt with lightly. At first blush, I was inclined towards introspection and further study, that a pattern could be established that would be more palatable and easier to deal with. The axiom of the easier, softer way came to mind, and Dr. Bob's constant admonitions to beware the Freudian complexes and to keep the program simple. Intuitively, I again turned to the absolutes. My sponsors in the groups shared with me their experience in going to their knees in front of the group to petition God through the seven-step prayer to remove all of these barriers of shortcomings and defects, that I may do His bidding. Also, it was called to my attention that God had proved His love for me with a gift of sobriety, and through His love I would be receiving His wisdom, strength, and power as needed for the ultimate restoration of my sanity and spiritual regeneration. Second thoughts confirmed that the shortcomings and defects reflected the improper use of my God-given free will. I had made a solemn commitment in the third step to turn my will and life over to God's care, and I had, in the fourth and fifth step, admitted and surrendered my wrongs to God for His forgiveness. I was now ready. The strength, understanding, and spiritual momentum had given me the desire and courage to implement the sixth and seventh steps. The spirit and intent of these steps had been carried out to the best of my ability in all honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. I now had surrendered both my transgressions and wrongs and my shortcomings and defects to God for His forgiveness, and a consciousness of God was now in place. The requirements to be met in steps 8 and 9 are that we make a list of people, places, and things that we have wronged and become willing to rectify, make amends, and restitution to them all. The mountain of anxiety, speculation, and embarrassment grew higher and higher. My courage was flagging, however, the old saw that if we do get to heaven, it will be from backing out of hell came to mind. The cold facts were that the restoration of my sanity, spiritual regeneration, sobriety, and perhaps my very soul was at stake. I had no options. A discussion in depth with my sponsor clarified my understanding and set up priorities to avoid absurdities and confusion that might result from misdirected efforts. In each case, I was confronted with a different set of conditions and situations. I found myself more and more praying to God for knowledge of His will. The absolutes would now become my spiritual guides in this exercise. I approached each confrontation and situation with a prayer that I be given the power to be honest, unselfish, and pure and loving in my efforts to carry out the letter and the spirit of steps 8 and 9. It was to be a long and arduous journey. However, on balance, I was received in kind with positive results. In employing the absolutes to the best of my ability, I was relieved of the dangerous and destructive judgments that could be made from my personal viewpoint as to success or failure of these actions. However, in any event, it would be pointless to speculate on the results, since the will of God would ultimately prevail. I had now reached the final stages of my personal recovery. Those steps between the third and the ninth had indeed brought about a personality change. The surrender of my wrongs in the fourth and fifth steps, and my shortcomings and defects in the sixth and seventh steps, were no longer barriers to God's wisdom, guidance, and love. The restitution and amends, as set out in the eighth and ninth step, had set in motion my spiritual regeneration. A compulsion had been lifted. I had acquired a satisfactory level of emotional stability, mental and physical health. God could and was doing for me that which I could not do for myself. I had had a taste of a God-directed life. The steps and the absolutes could lead me to a higher understanding by striving to improve my conscious contact with God. Phase 3 of my recovery dealt with steps 10, 11, and 12 as a group, the four absolutes to be used as spiritual guides for thoughts, words, and deeds. The 10th, 11th, and 12th steps offer relief and benefits for maintaining and a consciousness of God. However, I had a taste of a God-directed life, and I was interested in becoming a new man with a new life, rather than a new man with a past life. The absolutes as spiritual guides for my thoughts also became a set of moral and ethical standards to gauge my actions, that I might strive for and attain a higher understanding and a new dimension of noble ideals. The 10th, 11th, and 12th step as a group present a plan for daily living for one moment at a time and one day at a time, with hardships as a pathway to peace, and surrendering to God's will that He will make all things right, that we may live in harmony with His will. The absolutes now became my medium for communication with God for forgiveness, direction, and knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out. My 10-step inventory, when examined over my daily activities, revealed a shocking lack of dedicated will in striving to be loving, honest, unselfish, and pure in my daily living experience. It would seem my real problem is in the improper use of my will. There was no flagrant or glaring defects or shortcomings dominating my life. However, there was a lack of will to practice the principles of love, unselfishness, purity, and honesty in my home, business, social, and other relationships with people. In applying the absolutes as a gauge to my daily 10-step inventory, I found that I was penalizing myself not because of my shortcomings and defects, but rather from the lack of striving to do the things that I could do and should be doing. In examining the number of times and opportunities during the day that I could have improved the situation, contributed to the welfare and happiness of others, and when I failed to do so, I was not acting in harmony with God's will. My apathy and complacency were now the barriers between myself, God, and my fellow man. The absolutes again became the basis for my meditation, and I prayed that God would forgive and remove my apathy and complacency, and that I may be given whatever was needed in the realm of the heart and spirit to practice the principles at all times in my affairs and improve my conscious contact with God. I am a living witness that God's grace, the steps as the philosophy, and the absolutes of the spiritual concepts is a path to a union with God, that we can be set free of our disease of alcoholism and reborn into spiritual liberty. The Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one moment at a time, enjoying one day at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. Taking as he did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, and trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. Amen.